Hi, everybody, and thanks for listening in on our Hilco Global Smarter Perspective podcasts. I'm your host, Steve Katz, and we're glad you could tune in today. We're going to be talking about an important trend that has been identified by the Hilco Forestry team and what it means for those who are operating across the market, as well as lenders with businesses in the forestry industry within their portfolios. Joining us for today's discussion from Hilco Valuation Services are Jesse Marzook, Senior VP, Director of Operations, and Paul Grisbin, Senior Manager of M&E. Guys, thanks for joining us.
Thanks, Steve. Glad to be here.
Good to be here.
All right. Glad to have you on. And I know you're busy, so thanks for breaking away to speak to us for just a few minutes about some of the things you've been observing in the market since you provided that last industry update for us back in Q4 of 23. It sounds like distress is on the rise. Jesse, can you just give us a quick top line of the situation, and then we can kind of dive into more detail from you and Paul?
Absolutely, Steve. Since we issued our last update within the last few months, we've seen even more stress among sawmills within the system. The pain has not been spread equally across regions, however. Lumber production in the Pacific Northwest and Western Canada has been impacted the most due to a reduction by the provincial government in the annual allowable cut in British Columbia, higher log costs, as well as higher labor costs. Unforeseen wildfires have also impacted production at a number of sawmills in British Columbia. The annual allowable cut in British Columbia fell approximately 20% from 2001 to 2003 as a result of the provincial government imposing limitations on the cutting of old growth forests. This has led to a significant number of closures among the province's sawmills. Case in point, West Fraser, one of the largest producers in the region, just closed its Fraser Lake sawmill, citing an inability to access economically viable fiber in the region. Numerous other closures have occurred across the province over the last few years. In Western Canada, production of lumber overall has dropped from 6.25 billion board feet in 2022 to 5.176 billion board feet in 2023. Similar policies are also impacting mills in the Pacific Northwest of the U.S. Hampton Lumber recently shut down an Oregon sawmill that had been in operation since 1961. Due to a proposed habitat conservation policy that would cut harvests in the state by up to 34%. Western U.S. lumber production overall dropped from 14.021 billion board feet in 2022 to 13.712 billion board feet in 2023. Sawmills in the southern part of the U.S. have taken market share from sawmills in the Pacific Northwest and British Columbia. They enjoy cheaper access to fiber, as well as cheaper labor costs.
Okay, Jesse, thanks a lot. That's a great 35,000-foot view. Gives us a nice setup for the rest of the discussion. Paul, what do these developments mean in terms of realizable liquidation value of sawmill assets moving ahead?
Yeah, well, that's the big question, right? Well, I'll take you through a few key considerations. And then, Jesse, maybe you can discuss others we've been working through with clients on current engagements. So first of all, although we're seeing more hardwood production facilities and sawmills pausing operations, particularly in the Pacific Northwest, very few have gone to liquidation in the last year. Our perspective is that, you know, most are temporarily shutting down operations with hopes that prices will come down that'll enable restarting of production. However, if these shutdowns result in a piecemeal liquidation, we would expect to see an overflooding of equipment in the used market, which would be difficult to absorb, and that would lead to discounted prices on the used market.
Yeah.
With that said, let's get into some specific considerations. I think a big portion of value in sawmills is in their material handling. This requires very costly equipment that include log loaders, front loaders, material handlers, skid steers, and large capacity diesel forklift trucks, like that 20 to 75,000 plus pound capacity. Each of these are utilized in various industries, right? And they'd have a large buying audience in the event of liquidation. Importantly, however, these are pretty harsh environments the machinery is running in. So end users would most certainly factor that condition into their bids. But our historic data indicates, although this equipment older than 10 years experiences a significant drop in value as compared with new cost, it still has a distinct and active buying audience at liquidation. It's also important to note that newer computerized optimized sawmill equipment, such as integrated 3D log scanning and automated grading systems, is more sought after. And I'll have more of an audience at liquidation as the industry's tight margin environment requires the latest optimization practices to reduce waste and increase production rates. With the current rate of technology improvement, older software, I'm thinking anything older than 15 years at this point, is considered obsolete. Then you get into older manual sawmill machinery. This stuff is selling at or near scrap, right? Buyers tend to obtain these machines very inexpensively. They tend to rebuild them and either to sell on the used market or run in their own facilities. Jesse?
Thanks, Paul. Appreciate it. Just wanted to add a few more things to what Paul mentioned. There are certain assets that are proving particularly difficult to liquidate currently, and they include wood-fired boilers, dust collection systems, lumber sorting systems, and dry kilns. These assets have a high cost of removal, which, depending on age and condition, may outweigh the value of the systems themselves. Dry kilns with masonry walls, for example, have essentially no value, although their dryer controls and fans may be salvageable components. Late model, 7 years and newer items, such as brand barkers, band saws, canters, gang rip saws, edgers, and planers, would see good demand in a liquidation. On the other hand, support equipment, such as log deck conveyors, chain conveyors, roll case conveyors, and transfer belts, are not selling for much at all. Buyers most frequently obtain these types of assets to salvage their component chain belts and drives, as frames are typically fabricated in-house. Vibratory conveyors, however, hold more value as they are sold in sections, are easier to integrate into existing systems, and are very expensive to buy new. And lastly, in terms of what we're seeing right now, we can confidently say that because assets such as chippers, chip screeners, and wood waste grinders are utilized in various wood-related industries other than sawmills, they have a much larger audience at liquidation. They are also easy to remove and fit on a flatbed trailer, which adds to their appeal as a buyer.
Okay, very concise. A lot of information there. I know we're really just calling out what's happening right now, but any final thoughts or watch-outs for lenders with exposure here, Paul?
Sure. So lenders with borrowers in the forestry and lumber market, and particularly those with sawmills within their portfolios, they should ensure they have a firm grasp of those businesses and any distinct operational challenges they may now be facing. Beyond business performance, these may include competitive threats or data-driven forecasting accuracy that could contribute to potential distress in 2024. Jesse, anything else?
No, I think that about covers it, Paul. Except that I want to add that we're definitely now advising more frequent appraisals moving forward during this period of heightened volatility. And of course, we're assisting in many of those efforts and welcome the opportunity to do so or to answer any questions that those who are listening might have pertaining to exposure within the forestry industries.
Okay, perfect. And for those who are listening who do want to reach out to you guys for a little more detail, can you give us your contact info? Jesse, you can go first.
Absolutely. Thanks, Steve. My email is jmarzouk, J-M-A-R-Z-O-U-K, at hilcoglobal.com. And my phone number is 847-849-2959.
And my email is paulg, that's P-A-U-L-G, at hilcoglobal.com. Global.com, phone number 847-313-4734.
All right, great. Thanks again, guys, for joining us to call out these important developments for lenders and others who are involved across the forestry industry. And listeners, we hope, as always, that this Smarter Perspective podcast provided you with at least one key takeaway that you can put to good use in your business or share with a colleague or client to help make them that much more successful moving forward. And remember that you can always check out more great podcasts and articles featuring timely insights from Hilco experts like Jesse and Paul at hilcoglobal.com/smarter-perspectives. Until next time, for Hilco Global, I'm Steve Katz.